Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
And on this week's episode, we're talking Chapter 4, The Body. I am excited because, full disclosure, everybody, the way we're doing this is that we've only seen this far, but up until this episode, we had seen this far, which I think we've explained. Right, Jessica?
Yeah, we had watched the first four episodes literally in one night before we decided we were going to podcast about it and stopped watching the episodes.
We put the brakes on.
So since we first started podcasting about this, we have not watched any new episodes because we had already seen the first four.
Which I think was a good move. I think it was smart to put the brakes on it so we could be genuinely surprised. Genuinely. Surprised at that which happened.
Generally.
The bummer last week when we covered this is that we knew the kid wasn't dead, or at least that wasn't his body they pulled out of the water. He could still be dead. I don't know.
That's why we watched episode four the first night we watched it, because we were like, okay, we better continue.
You know, I've been so rude. That's Jessica, and I am Dean.
Oh, hi.
And we are part of LSG Media. So how you doing? We know that there's a lot of new ears on LSG Media because this particular podcast is getting some play in the iTunes store, which is nice. It's consistently in the top 50 in TV and film. And I just want to say to everybody in the chat, thank you very much if you were one of the people that rated and reviewed us on iTunes. And for those of you not in the chat, thank you very much, because it really helps us get visibility, which is hard now that they've locked down the new and noteworthy to essentially staff picks, which don't move much. So the new and noteworthy stuff has nothing to do with your downloads or your subscriptions or anything. It's purely driven by what the staff feels like putting in that day. At least that's what I've heard. And I believe that has been confirmed by Apple, but I'm not sure. So don't quote me on that. But so the only way your podcast is going to get noticed nowadays is if you're in what's hot, which is going to have a lot to do with your numbers, or what's in the top 200, which has a lot to do with new subscribers and your reviews, I believe. Again, it's an algorithm that nobody really understands except the people at Apple. But here's what I'll tell you. We have been sitting up top in the top 50 or so, which we're very grateful for. So this is a long-winded way to say thank you very much to those of you who have rated and reviewed us in iTunes. If you haven't, please take a minute to do so. It doesn't take long. In fact, you don't even have to write a review if you're too lazy to do that.
Just put some stars.
Just put a couple stars, whatever you think we're worth. And we'll go from there. So
we could turn into one of those podcasts that like reads a 5-star review on air every episode.
Yeah.
Ooh, I don't like that.
Let me open up my mouth and see if I can get my dick all the way in my throat as I read my own reviews.
There are podcasts that I love, and then at the end they're like, okay, it's time to read our 5-star review of the week. And I'm like, fast forward.
Actually, you know what the worst thing is when they tell people to rate them 5 stars. How about I rate you what I think you're worth, bitch?
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's what you don't do. Any budding podcasters out there, here's what you don't do. Don't rate another podcast that is in your genre and give them less than 5 stars. That's a hacky fucking move. I was talking to Matthew Anderson, one of our other hosts, about this, and I was talking about how, it'd be like if a comedian watched a Netflix special of a comedian and then gave him like 4 stars. That's so hacky to me. So don't be one of those people. If you have a podcast and you're listening to this and you're going to rate another podcast in your genre, fucking give them 5 stars, or just don't do anything. Don't be one of those people, because that's the worst.
But if it's outside of your genre, you just shit on it all you want.
Yeah, yeah. In the chat, Lone Star Kid says, I like when people read their criticisms out loud. It is funny. We've done that on the X-Files podcast that we have.
I like when they read mean tweets on whatever late night show does that. I love that part.
Oh, that's
when they make celebrities
too.
Read their own like tweets talking shit about them. That's like literally my favorite thing in the world.
Oh, that reminds me. We're recording this live on Mixlr. Mixlr.com/LSG-media, Mixlr.com/LSG-media for a complete listing of all live scheduled recordings. Go to schedule.libertystreetgeek.net. That's schedule.libertystreetgeek.net. The cool thing about Mixlr is that you can chime in on the fly. We've made mistakes in the past. People correct them. People share their funny thoughts. They chat with each other, and they're part of a show as it's happening.
If they want to talk shit about us, maybe we can read it out loud today.
Which is a unique experience. Yeah, we definitely can do that. Which is a unique experience because you get to influence the show as it's happening, should you say something influential enough to make it to our lips and then into your ears, which sounds like this is getting very intimate.
A little bit. It's kind of freaking me out.
I'm freaking you out a little bit. That's fine. We'll get past it.
Okay.
All right. Without further ado, let's get into Stranger Things Chapter 4, the body.
Just go home, Jonathan.
No, this is not an okay time for you to shut down.
Shut down?
No, we have to deal with this, Mom. We have to deal with the funeral.
The funeral? For who? For that thing back there?
Let me get this straight. Will, that's not his body because he's in the lights, right? And there's a monster in the wall. Do you even hear yourself?
I know it sounds crazy. I sound crazy.
Yeah.
You think I don't know that? It is crazy. But I heard him, Jonathan. He talked to me.
Let's tell people how we do this. Initial impressions, couple listener comments, then some final thoughts.
In the middle, we talk about the episode.
Yeah.
Well, we just skip that part.
Right. I guess.
we just give our initial impressions, read some comments, give our final thoughts, and then we sign off. The podcast is 15 minutes long.
Guys, the show is cool, but real short. I went to the bathroom and it was over when I came out. So yes, we'll explicate our way through the scenes, which is fun because it refreshes people's memories about things and all that good jazz. So Jessica, do me a favor. Why don't you start this week? Why don't you tell me? You start every week, but
I know.
Why don't
you
tell
start?
Me?
How about you start this week?
With my initial impressions?
Yeah, let's go. Your turn, bud.
My turn, bud, huh? This episode was as good as all the other ones. That's how I'm going to start. I love the fact that this is called The Body.
Me too.
It is creepy, and I think we're seeing some of the stuff that they've laid the groundwork for starting to pave its way into the main through line for this story that they're telling. The thing I liked a lot about this episode is that there's not a lot of fuckery here. We pulled the kid out of the water last week, but we're pretty convinced he is not dead this week, based on Joyce's testimony alone, and then based off of the interactions we're seeing with the Heath kit, I think they called that ham radio.
I don't know. I just call it the radio thingy in my notes.
The radio that the kids have, Joyce's interaction with not just the lights this week, but hearing him in the wall.
Seeing him almost.
Seeing him, yeah, seeing an image of him. The fact that we have the body uncovered as a fake, a scam. I like that. So I like when a show, it's a gut punch when they fish him out of the quarry last week, but they don't make you sit on it. They're not trying to make you go, oh my God, poor kid, for a long time. You know pretty fast that it's probably not him that they pulled out of there. And then you definitely know it's not him once Hopper goes to the morgue and takes care of Biz, which is great. So overall, I thought this episode was good. It was exciting. We get more information into a larger conspiracy. We see Hopper's investigation heating up a bit, which I love. I love seeing Hopper get more involved. I like his character a lot. I also like what's going on with Nancy and Jonathan. They really sidelined Steve this week, and they put Nancy in with Jonathan, which I am intrigued by because both of those kids have something in common in that their siblings are missing. Well, not a sibling to her, but her best friend Barb is missing. They both have somebody missing. They're coming together under that, which I love. And it's awesome. It's really cool. In the chat, Daniel Fauci is saying, I like that they don't make all the male characters dicks all the time.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
We did. Like. Yeah, and it's true still this week, and it continues to be true.
I still try to hate Steve every second of my day, though.
But
I
you
try
can.
My damnedest. I was a little down on him this week, but we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. But I think that I think what we were saying last week, which is that her interest in him is the issue, not his interest in her, which would have been the stereotypical route to go for the divergening of this poor young girl who's now going to be shunned by him after he bangs her. We're starting to see maybe the opposite is true. Obviously, this is not a normal high school romance flick. We got a wacky thing going on in the background that's distracting, but I like that they flipped the script a little here, and I like that the characters still show some depth after four episodes. That is my initial impressions. Of course, the music continues to knock it out of the park. Some Joy Division atmosphere, which is a nice wrist-slitting song. And, or, you know, if you're going to sit down to play Vampire the Masquerade with your friends, you can put that on in the background, or Concrete Blonde or something. I don't know. Whatever you're into.
Wow.
But Jessica.
Yeah.
That's my initial impressions of Stranger Things Chapter 4, The Body. Let's get to it.
I don't get to give an initial impression?
Well, I guess. Go.
So mad. I actually, in my initial impression, would like to make a point to read part of a listener comment or a listener comment in general.
You're cracking early. I like your style.
Andrea Ramos.
Who is she? She a listener?
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard of her.
Fellow Stephen King obsessive You know,
she's awesome.
She sends me murder podcasts to listen to, so we're pretty tight now. She said, I like how they call this one The Body, which is a Stephen King shout out if I ever heard one. And that is part of my initial impression on this episode.
Stand By Me, right?
Yes. Yeah, Stand By Me, the movie, is based on a novella called The Body. And when
can I try to do an imitation?
Of what?
The train knocked Rame Bauer's body off the tracks and his life out of his body. I don't know. I can't remember what it's actually said, but that's Richard Dreyfuss, right? Doesn't he narrate that shit?
He may.
Yeah, something about his kid's name's Ray Browers, right?
His name is Ray Bauer.
Brower? I think it's Brower. Or
I
Bauer.
Only remember Gordy LaChance. So that's
Gordy LaChance.
Which is funny because I knew a kid in high school named Al LaChance and he used to call himself Gordy LaChance.
I remember Gordy LaChance and Will and Vern. Wait, not Will.
No, Will's in this.
Ray Brower? I want to say it's Ray Brower.
It's Ray something. Hold on. Now I got to check because it's going to make me crazy.
Well, pretty sure it's Ray Brower.
Yep, Ray Brower, Gordy LaChance, Chris Chambers, Teddy Duchamp, and Vern Tessio.
Tessio, that's right.
But it's this similar thing, except in The Body, they're searching for the body. That's the thing that they're doing. And
that's a great point.
It's we find the body, and then that spurns our characters into action. I just think it's interesting, and I do think it's, I really, really think that the show just sucks Stephen King's dick all the time.
You think the show is really just giving
my God
and little shaft and ball
well deserved, let me tell you, for you, SK.
How do you think,
deserve every second of it?
Do you think SK's liking it? Do you think he's down with
it? He loves it. Oh my God, yeah. He made a whole Facebook post about how much he loves it.
About how good it felt.
Yeah. And they posted some pictures of his dog, and I thought Stephen King is the greatest man who has ever lived.
I thought you said his dong for a minute. Freshly sucked by the show. My freshly sucked dong. Next thing you know, he writes some kind of horror novel for 1,000 pages about it.
This show continues to feel to me like a Stephen King novel on my screen. And that is the greatest compliment I can give anything. Because to me, Stephen King is a god among men.
Wow.
Honestly.
He's pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. I'm actually rereading this. Not rereading. I never read it. I'm reading The Stand / listening to it.
I'm reading a book called Bird Box that's not by anybody important because I've never written another book before.
Pretty wild.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we know what we're all reading, let's get back to the show.
I'm going to read the new
Harry Potter book next.
Let's just do a book appreciation podcast instead.
But can we one day?
No.
I just got really excited.
All right. Let's make our way through this.
Okay.
So we start with this exterior shot of the sky, which I thought was a bit telling. I don't know if that's an extraterrestrial thing, but and then the camera shoots down. We see the buyer's residence. We go inside. It's nighttime. And we get right to the police investigating what's going on. They're obviously looking for some clues, some evidence. They peek at the wall. The working theory is, and I like how we do this
muted
little trick of the mute with, oh my God, with the audio.
So well done.
Right. Working theory is that he crashed his bike, made his way to the quarry, and fell in.
Like the earth gave out underneath him.
Yeah. Hopper asks Joyce if she understands. Joyce tells Hopper that whoever they found isn't her boy. She talked to him a half hour ago. She explains how he was communicating, how he was hiding from the thing in the wall. Hopper asks what kind of thing it was. Joyce describes it as long arms and lacking a face. And Hopper is really trying here. And that's something I like about this.
Me too.
He brings up Sarah. I saw her too. I didn't know what was real. And I like this. This is a great setup. And this scene, there's a couple scenes. This one and then, of course, the argument between Jonathan and Joyce are the only scenes that really linger on us really being concerned that Will is dead. And that's what I was mentioning in my initial impressions. We don't wait forever. We get right to it. We didn't need to see the kids crying all day. We want to see the kids on their adventure, doing their thing, and running around on their bikes, solving these crazy dark mysteries that are in their small town of Hawkins. But I like how Hopper's trying here. If anybody knows what this is like, it's Hopper. He has a unique perspective on this, having lost his daughter, Sarah. He figured it out. He had to pack it away or he'd fall out of a well he couldn't get out of. One of the things I like about this interaction is that Joyce gets it. Joyce is self-aware enough to say, I know, this sounds crazy. I get it. She's not denying the fact that she sounds like a cuckoo. She is out with that. She embraces it and says, I get it. I know why you would feel this way, man. But I'm telling you, this is what I heard. This is what happened. And that's something that happens later in the episode with Jonathan and Nancy, yes, which I think is cool. They both go through this. They both go through this. I know this sounds nutty, but pay attention to me because this is the reality. So she's lucid enough to not seem crazy, but she is frantic. She is strung out. She's exhausted. They pull this kid out of the thing. She's convinced it's not her kid. And that's one of the things I like about it, is that this whole episode, we never feel like Joyce lingers on it either. And because she doesn't, the episode really doesn't.
Right, exactly. I want to comment, too, on the interaction between Hopper and Joyce, former lovers, as far as I'm concerned.
Go for it.
There's so much depth to this conversation that they have, where Hopper tries to relate to her because of the death of his daughter, but Joyce is not having it. She's like, right. No, this is not grief. This is something else. He's not gone. And there's so much to it, because it's like this circle where Hopper's like, I'm going to try to help her because my child died. And Joyce is like, I don't believe you. And Hopper's like, she's in denial. She needs to understand. And she's like, no, I'm correct. You know what I mean? It keeps circling. And I just imagine Hopper thinking, well, that was me once. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He really feels that way.
Absolutely.
Like, I felt that way at this point, and my daughter wasn't still alive. So Joyce feels this way right now, and her son's not still going to be alive. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
He can't go and see it from her perspective because his daughter's still dead.
Sure.
I guess, if that makes any sense. I'm very curious as to how his daughter died, and I wonder if we're going to find that out. Don't tell me in the chat if we do find out, but I really hope that we do.
That does...
Just totally out of curiosity.
You know, you do remind me that we are covering each one of these episodes 1 week at a time. We will not spoil future episodes. We have not seen future episodes at this point. We now have caught up to ourselves. And each episode that we're going to take is going to be something we haven't seen before. So if we make predictions now and they're right, sorry, we're not trying to spoil. We're just simply making predictions when we get to the end of this episode. But yeah, I will just tell people that we will spoil the episode in question, obviously, but we will not spoil future episodes. We will cover those when we get to them. So he does tell her, maybe you should go to the morgue, which is basically saying, you got to see your son dead to get it. You got to get it through your head. He's dead. He's giving her some tough love here.
Right.
So he exits. She says, she just sits
gotta
there.
Gotta go get my axe.
Yep. Hopper goes to the truck. We cue up the Joy Division tune. He shuts off his truck, decides to sleep in his truck at Joyce's house, I guess to look out for her,
which was nice.
Jonathan listens to Joy Division in his headphones. Joyce goes out to the shed, grabs her axe. She sits down, and that's it. We cut away to the Wheelers.
Correct.
At the Wheelers, we see Karen and her husband watching the news report of the discovery of Will's body. Mike is down in the basement looking at drawings, and he's annoyed with Elle right off the bat here. She's playing with the radio, and it's annoying him. Take me through this.
Yeah, he's already pissed at her for lying basically about Will, and now... It's interesting because Mike doesn't just abandon her. He still brings her back home, which tells you something about Mike. He's still really mad about the same thing, but at first he takes it out with the walkie-talkie thing until finally it turns into that she lied. Like, why did you lie to me?
Right.
Friends don't do that. You hurt me. Lucas was right about you all along.
What you did sucks.
Yes. And Elle is upset because she's a sweetie pie and I love her.
And then the insane happens.
We hear
Will's
Will.
Voice shoots over the radio. Should I stay or should I go now? He's singing in his little kid's voice. Elle's nose bleeds, and we get a great moment of tension here. Mike tries to talk to him over the radio immediately and only gets static in return. And then Mike asks, was that? And of course, Elle answers for him by saying, Will.
Mm-hmm. Finishing each other's sentences. It's meant to be.
This scene is cool because... It's exactly as you said. Mike is upset with Elle. He's very upset at the situation with Will, but he's too kind of a kid to just turn his back on Elle. And his frustration, as soon as there's evidence that possibly Will is around, shifts immediately back to, is that like we're talking again? We're back on speaking terms again. There's no ill will here. He doesn't harbor any resentment. And that's another thing about this Mike kid that's so nice. He's such a nice kid.
He's just wonderful.
He's a sweetie pie. We get our opening credits and we move over to Joyce sleeping.
With the axe.
Yep. She wakes up hearing Will say, Mom. She thinks she sees Will right in front of her as she's waking up, but it's Jonathan telling her to wake up.
They have to go see Will's body.
Right. We move over to Karen Wheeler checking in on Will, who is in bed.
I mean, you mean Mike, because Will is a body in the morgue
or perhaps
in the wall.
I'm sorry. Karen Wheeler checks in on Mike, who's in bed. He doesn't want to go to school today, obviously. Mom says, okay, no problem. Why don't you come with me? And he's like, you know what, Mom? I'm going to stay home. She lets him stay home alone. And as soon as Mom leaves, he pops up out of that bed grabs the radio, calls Lucas, says it's urgent, gets Lucas to pick up. Lucas is not in the mood. Obviously, he's upset his friend is dead. But he listens anyway, because these kids all love each other. Mm-hmm. And Mike tells Lucas, screw his funeral. Grab Dustin. We got shit to do.
That's right.
I like this a lot. This is what I mean by this episode. It doesn't put the kids in the corner of misery. It allows them, based on this, the second scene or so of this episode, they go right to Will's voice is heard. The kids have a mission. Let's get cracking, which is awesome. And I like this because we know that stuff they've already planted in the series is going to come back, like the Heath kid, etc. So they're going to have to go in there to try to boost the signal and all the stuff that these kids want to do. And I like that because it pulls you into the adventure of what's going on with my friend. And despite the heavy tones of this show, and there are those heavy tones, generally speaking, I think it still feels like an 80s adventure film that these kids are going on and they're trying to get their friend back. And that's what makes it so enjoyable. I think that's why it's so wildly popular, because it's not super heavy.
Right.
I could be wrong. It might get heavy in two episodes or three episodes, but that's kind of how I feel about it at this point. So Hopper is in the morgue waiting room, and he learns that Gary, I guess their medical examiner for the town of Hawkins, was dismissed by a state autopsy, by a state agent who was going to autopsy the body. There was a bunch of stateies with him, I guess, and that's it. So we get a little clue.
Clue number one that something is very wrong here.
Absolutely. We go to the viewing area. We see barely Will's body. Mom asks about a birthmark.
After Jonathan has already ran away gagging.
Jonathan is done. Later we see Jonathan talking to Hopper in the waiting room. Mom's probably doing paperwork. And Hopper asks how everything's been going. And Jonathan admits that his mom has had anxiety problems. And that he's worried.
I think this is important.
I do too. And that he's worried. But he still says, I think we're going to be okay. My mom, she's tough. And Hopper agrees. So before Joyce bursts into the room, talk to me about this.
This goes back to this thing about this prior relationship between Joyce and Hopper that I'm like obsessed with, partially. And the fact that after all this went down, that Hopper stayed at their house. And I think it's because he knows this about Joyce, that she had anxiety problems in the past and that she's had these struggles before. I think that this is a well-known fact, not just from Hopper, not just coming from Jonathan, but I think maybe in general that the town knows this. You know what I mean? I get the impression that Joyce and Jonathan and Will, the family as a whole, are maybe seen as a little bit of oddballs.
I think so.
So I don't necessarily think this anxiety problem thing would be a surprise to anyone who knows Joyce.
Yeah.
And of course, it continues on the same path as we're watching the show. I mean, is Joyce crazy or is there something going on? We know there's something going on now at this point, but there was a time where we could have been like, is Joyce crazy?
Sure. Yeah. And he still feels this responsibility for her, and he still feels a connection with her, he could have gone anywhere, but he decided to stay out there because he's concerned. There is a history there, as you've mentioned.
Right.
I also think it's important to note that Jonathan, in this scene, knows that his mom is very strong. Jonathan is aware of what his mother has had to do to make their life what it is. They own a house. She works hard. She has two good kids with good friends. Jonathan's a little weird. You know, he surreptitiously photos stripping young women. But, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to get one oddball out of the bunch with no dad around. But I do like that Jonathan still doesn't abandon his mom here. He doesn't just say, all right, I'm done. I'm not, you know, he knows that mom is strong.
Yeah, they have to stick with each other.
So Joyce bursts in, and I don't know what you think that is in there, but that is not my son. At this point in the episode, the first time, do you think that she is thinking crazy, or do you think that she's onto something here?
Well, I mean, I think we know in general that there's something supernatural about this series, so we don't think that the body in there is necessarily his body.
I agree.
But I don't think that there was anything that she saw in the body that made her think that it wasn't his.
Yep.
I think it's still the same feeling that she knows she spoke with him. I know people mention like the birthmark. She has to see the birthmark.
Sure.
Like maybe the birthmark wasn't on there. I don't believe that. I think the birthmark was on there.
I think so too.
I think everything was perfect. I think these people did their job right. I don't think there was one thing on that body that should have made Joyce concerned.
No.
Except that she's a mother and she knows.
Did you notice, and I don't know if this is common, fortunately I've never had to do this, but it's kind of a distance. Like, they don't let her ride up on it. And I guess that's by design, especially if it's a fake. You don't want her to grab it and start wailing and then the jig is up, right?
Yeah, I don't know how those things go because I've watched TV shows and things where they bring you right up to the body. But then that other show we watched on HBO, they just show the guy a picture of the body.
Oh, what was that?
The Night Of.
The Night Of, right.
Yeah, they're trying to identify a body and they just show the next of kin a photograph. They don't even bring him in the room to see the body.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it depends on...
Although his reaction was the same as Joyce, which was, that's not her.
Yeah.
And he's like, actually, maybe it is.
Yeah, I like it. So we move over to Nancy and Steve briefly talking at school. And
this is where I'm down on Steve.
Yeah. So Nancy tells him that she went to look for Barb at his house. They discussed the man with no face or maybe a mask. Nancy has a bad feeling about this. Steve is nervous about the cops getting involved with this. He thinks his parents will murder him, specifically his dad. But Nancy expects more empathy out of Steve because she wants him to be more upset about Barb. He cautions her against bringing up the beers and she walks away upset. So talk to me about this.
This is when we're turning in the right direction of making Steve a douchebag. Like, I know in my heart that he is. Because hashtag Team Jonathan.
Well, go for it.
And he's not even a douchebag. He's just being a normal kid.
He's being a normal
kid. You know, I'm just trying to hate him. I'm like trying really hard. So in his normal kid behavior, he does exactly what a kid does. Barb's missing. The cops think Barb ran away.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy thinks she saw a man with no face. Steve's like, why the hell did you even go back to my house? Like, this is so weird. And his response is, I think the same way any kid's response is when there's trouble and there's cops involved. Oh my God, we were all drinking beer. What if someone finds out?
Right. Based on the fact that he said his dad is a dick. I think Steve is acting completely in character here. I also think that if news...
Don't give a shit about Barb.
We already know that the town knows that Will's body's been discovered. So, especially they think it might have been an accident. He fell in a quarry. Now, if I'm Steve, I probably have no concern about... I think Barb's just fucking off being a dummy somewhere. I don't think there's a serial killer running around snatching people up.
Steve does not know Barb.
No.
At all.
No.
To be able to say that she wouldn't run away. But I still am going to, you know, be mad at him because I got to do something.
Yeah, you need that in your life.
I got to hate somebody.
You got to hate that high school kid.
It's got to be Steve.
He was the kid that spurned you in school, wasn't
No,
he?
Steve reminds me of, you know, Steve Holt in Arrested Development. Like, every time I see him, that's all I think of is that he's just going to go, Steve Holt!
And shoot his arms up in the air.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I mean, I don't know why, but that's all I think of every time I look at him.
Yeah, I like this. I think it's all pretty realistic. Obviously, Nancy has expectations of Steve as their friends
as
who are
high school
intimate.
Kids. Do.
And that is...
And women who are in their 30s do.
No, her expectations of him are... I think you have less expectations as you get older because you're more realistic. I think when you're younger and more vulnerable, I think she wants Steve to understand how she feels about Barb, and he just doesn't. He's talking about beers and cops, and that pisses her off.
No, but I think that's the same at any point that you want people, or if you're dating someone or sleeping with somebody that you think you're going to have this like serious like romantic relationship with, that you want them to understand these important parts of your life. In this case, it's her relationship with Barb. It's that she's telling him something that sounds crazy and she needs him to listen to her.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's
true. For her to say
true.
To him, like, she saw something and was it an animal? I don't know. Was it, it had no face? Okay, was the guy wearing a mask? She doesn't think so. She's saying something crazy to him. And what she wants is for him to be like, I believe you, Nancy. I'm
right.
with you. You're right. Barb did not run away.
But my point
that's
is
the same
that
thing somebody who's 40 would want,
I think. Yeah, but I think when you're older, those boundaries have already been set. There's already a clear indication if you have a healthy relationship as to the expectations. In high school, that shit is not, you don't sit down and have a discussion like, that doesn't come up. It's shit. You know what I mean? When you're young, especially that situation where they were kind of friendly and then they boned, it's not like this highly developed and sophisticated relationship in high school.
What if I came home tomorrow?
Oh my God. This
and
is so
I funny. Said that when I was at work, down in the x-ray room, a man came up from behind the corner and he had long arms and it seemed like no face and it was really scary and now somebody I know is missing.
You would be like,
you're fucking crazy. Bye.
No, I would say, please don't call the cops because of the beers.
Because of the beers.
If you call the cops because of the beers, we're fucked. Yeah, I think if you come home and you tell me that somebody has no face and long arms, I'm probably going to tell you to go see a professional because I don't know how to help you.
Can I tell you something that this show has really missed on for me? And this is my biggest complaint about the show.
Go.
Is seeing the thing. I don't want to see it.
I agree.
Because the way it is described is fucking terrifying to me.
Long arms and no face.
And would give me nightmares. Like I read like some of those creepypastas that give me nightmares
yeah.
for like weeks. And because I see it and it is not that scary, it has really ruined it for me because the description of this thing is fucking terrifying. And I wish they had not showed it to us as clearly as they have at this point.
Yeah, I concur. I concur.
Biggest complaint about the show.
Yeah. And a fair complaint considering that it's been pretty fucking good so far. Mm-hmm. Well, Jonathan tries to get to his mother, to get his mom in the car. So they start arguing on the street. She needs to think. She wants Jonathan to go home. She exclaims those final words in her sentences. Jonathan tells her it is not okay for her to shut down because they need to prepare for a funeral. For who? That thing back there? She exclaims with a look of her on her face like, what are you fucking dumb, kid?
This is very, very heart-wrenching because this is a boy who just saw his brother's dead body as far as he knows, and this is his mother's response. This is hard for anyone to deal with, let alone an 18-year-old kid who has basically no support system.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's funny because Joyce is strong and she's a good parent, but then she's a human being too. And we see that the struggle that she's going through means that Jonathan really has to step up and kind of grow up. And mom's not been 100% there for him. And he's had to be there for her. And that's just hard, man. And you know, this is something we've talked about in past episodes, but yeah, it is heartbreaking. This is tough to watch. Jonathan asks her if she hears herself. Do you hear yourself, mom?
And she knows, as we talked about before.
Again, she's very self-aware of how this sounds. I agree. Sounds crazy, but I know what I heard. I will not stop until I bring him home. While you're talking to the lights, mom, the rest of us will be having a funeral for Will. And then, of course, he's embarrassed. He's 18. He's full of emotion. He's raw.
People watching everywhere.
He says the show is over. He stomps off. So again, we continue to see this great dynamic between Jonathan and Joyce, which is she is the mom. She loves her kids, but she's very single-minded right now, and it is damaging Will a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to play into the story any more than this.
Damaging Jonathan because Will's already been kidnapped by a monster, so he's already damaged enough, honestly.
He's already he got fucking kid got pulled into a wall like poltergeist and shit.
There's something about Jonathan, and I don't know if it's because like I relate to him in the way that I do, but there's just something about him and his character that really, really speaks to me. And I feel like very emotional about him and the things he goes through in the show. Mm-hmm. I really like Jonathan.
Did you stealthily photograph young girls taking their bras off?
And before you started to say that, I was going to end my speech by saying, except I don't stalk women and I'm not a pedophile. Mm-hmm. I guess not a pedophile, just a stalker.
Just a stalker.
Because I am not any of those things.
Did you have a kind of a short in your face haircut and look away when girls looked at you and kick rocks?
When girls looked at me, for sure.
I could see you with your jean jacket on, your cropped shitty haircut, your fucking camera in your hand.
I was a boy in high school.
And yeah, just hanging out in the bushes, taking pictures of some girl you liked. You're like, oh my God, she likes Melissa Etheridge too. You see her little CDs. You just start envisioning that video.
She's got the Indigo Girls too. I know I found the right one.
You just start envisioning the fucking the Lilith Fair you're going to go to together and how fun it's going to be in 96.
I really wanted to go to the Lilith Fair when I was young.
Yeah, I bet. Well, we move over to the kids.
The Losers Club, as I call them.
And they sit while Elle plays with the radio. Lucas suggests that they likely tuned into a baby monitor.
Lucas, you just need to open your mind and believe, young man.
So
I love Lucas, the voice of reason, the voice of the audience. He's adorable.
I did a little digging, and baby monitors did exist in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep, and there was one, the popular one by Fisher-Price, actually. Fisher. Was it Fisher-Price?
Probably.
I think it might have been Fisher-Price. And they were talking about, they actually had been around for a long, long time, but they started to become commercially viable more in the mid to late 80s, but
and
then really big in the 90s because they're like 90s SIDS. Because when SIDS was a thing, that's when they're like, you know what? Don't put your babies to sleep on their bellies because it's killing them.
Yeah, you're actually
stop doing that. And that's that was kind of interesting to look into some of the history here.
Baby monitors definitely, because when I was born, I definitely had a baby monitor. But this thing about picking up baby monitors on walkie-talkies is true. Not necessarily even walkie-talkies, but I remember when you first started using cordless phones. Sometimes your cordless phone would pick up a baby monitor and you would hear a baby monitor while you were on a call.
I used to pick up my sometimes I would get crossed up with my neighbor's phone.
Oh, really? I never had that.
Crazy.
But we used to pick up baby monitors on, like, you'd be on the phone and you'd be able to hear it almost in the background. It was really, really creepy. Like, as when you're a kid, it's like, what the hell? Why, right. why am I hearing this? I'm trying to have a conversation with my friend about what color we're going to paint our nails tomorrow. And there, but now if that happened to me, I'd have nightmares for weeks.
There you go.
Oh, to be a child again.
Mike asks, does that sound like a baby? And that he was singing that weird song that he likes. That's cute for Mike.
Can I just mention a comment in the chat? David Earle said that Lucas was the first one to not believe in Santa Claus. He is correct. That describes Lucas to a T. And he probably ruined it for his friends, too, because he seems like the type to not let them continue on in that fantasy.
I love Lucas. He's cool.
Me too.
Mike suggests that maybe Elle is channeling Will. Like Professor X, Dustin suggests, which is awesome. Too. And then Lucas reminds them that Will was pulled from the water. He is dead. Dustin thinks it could be his ghost. And Lucas, this is the best part about Lucas. This is where we see that even though he's the voice of the audience, he's still a kid. Mm-hmm. Because Lucas is like, maybe it is his ghost.
I know. It can't be Will talking on the thing. It's probably a baby monitor. Elle can't be channeling him. His body's dead. And then we get ghost. And he's like, oh, wait, logically?
Seems like
a ghost. Since he's dead, a ghost is the one logical thing that could work here.
But Mike says, no, we have to find him. He's alive. He's out there. The boys determine they need to get to Clark's Heathkit for a stronger signal. Lucas says that the Heathkits at school and they won't be able to get in there with weirdo, he says.
Yeah, just look at her.
So they start setting up a disguise. We cue up some cool music and then we get Elle dressed up looking cute.
I can't even talk to you about how much I love this scene.
Go for it.
Oh my God. I'm smiling just thinking about how absolutely adorable and wonderful this was. I love them going through the stuff. I love Mike putting makeup on her. Like, he knows how to do that. The wig, the dress. And when she ever comes out and Mike says, she looks pretty. And then he pauses for a really long time, says, good, pretty good. Like, he's gotta stop and be like, oh, no, I didn't mean it. And her looking at herself in the mirror and saying, pretty good. And again, melts my heart. All this little girl wants to do is be a little girl. And here she is.
It's
wonderful. It's so well done. It's so adorable. I just love it. I love it. I love this.
It's good stuff. Daniel Felch in the chat is asking, how do they have a wig? I know the answer to that.
Nancy.
No, I know the answer to that.
It belonged to Dad?
Dad. It's Dad's wig.
Yeah, I knew
it. Yep. He actually has a collection. Mr. Wheeler has a collection of hooker skulls in his basement, and his trunk is lined with plastic. So every once in a while, he drives into town, he gets himself a hooker, kills her, and parades around the house like Buffalo Bill, asking the mirror if he wants to fuck him. And that's exactly why the kids had access to a wig.
You put that lotion in the basket.
You put that lotion in the basket. So I will say this. This scene, when you stop to think about it, if you just stop right now while you're watching this episode or listening to this podcast, and you say to yourself, hold on a second, what the hell's going on? These kids are going to sneak into a school with their little shitty disguise. That's fucking adorable. I love that these kids are doing this.
It makes me wish that, how old are these kids supposed to be? 10, 12? I don't understand how to pick out ages by looking at kids. It's like you're a baby.
Is that what you told the cops?
Or you're an adult.
Thought she was 27.
Listen, we all know that I like my men older. So, what was I going to say? Oh, I want to go on this adventure with these kids. I want to be their age again and going on adventures. Like, I don't go on adventures anymore.
Can we talk about adventures?
Yeah, let's.
I don't think kids go on adventures anymore that much.
I don't think they do either.
And that's what I love about this. I love that these kids are going to go to school with their Swedish cousin who's in town for the funeral.
Oh my God, I can't hit that person.
Who comes from a bad place, which is cold.
Sweden.
And break into, essentially, use this when they're not supposed to. The whole idea of this craziness is something. And that's what I love about it. And I love the 1983 loosey-goosey, like, this is my cousin, and they don't need paperwork, they don't need a phone call, they don't need anything. They let the kid go to the memorial at
now
the auditorium.
Now you'd be swiped into it with school. Yeah, like, doors are locked.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, they'll fucking have RFID tags on your kids soon, I'm telling you. Back helicopters! All right, so I like how Elle looks in the mirror and is happy with what she sees. It's awesome.
It warms my heart, honestly.
We go to the lab. We get a quick look at a man named Shepard, who's basically a human lure for demons, ether demons, I call them, because he's got himself attached to a cable, which is attached to a winch, and he's slowly being led into this organic mass.
That is growling, by the way.
Yeah, it makes growling noises. he claws his way in, goes in there, and we don't know what's going to happen.
No, we do not.
Nancy Wheeler gets pulled out of class to talk to the police. Ooh.
That's the worst when that happens. Not really, they're but like remember like, when you were in high school?
Jessica Vizzino, why do you have these pictures, A? And B, why are you talking to underage students?
But you know, when you're in high school and like you get called down to, but this is like work too. Like at work, like when they paid you and they want somebody to go to the business office, you're like, okay, what did I do? What did I do? Mm. It's like being in school again, basically. Yeah. And typically they're just like, you're going to a CE, no big deal. But you sweat for like a half hour until you have to do it. It's just like high school. So I guess that never changes. But you know, I just picture they knock on the door. Oh, can we see Nancy?
Yeah.
Nancy's like, oh my God, oh my God. God, oh my God, oh my God.
It looks like Hopper put this on Callahan and Powell to do. Mom is obviously present because you're not going to question a kid without the parent being there.
Unless you're Stephen Avery's nephew. But I mean, you know, that's fine.
They ask about the argument. Nancy says it wasn't really an argument. She wanted to leave. I didn't. I told her to go. Then I went upstairs to put on dry clothes. The cops asked her if something about a bear. And she says, no, I'm not sure what it was. She thinks whatever it was took Barb. No bear signs, no car signs. They ask Nancy if Barb ever discussed running away. They ask if Barb could have been jealous of Steve.
Yeah, the cops think Barb is a lesbian too. Just going to throw it right out there.
Well, I mean, that haircut.
Those cops just seize right onto the opportunity that Barb might be a jealous lesbian who ran away because her girlfriend found a new man.
They're like,
check the Lilith Fair, guys.
We didn't find Barb, but we found this backpack. And in it are some Lilith Fair tickets. Some Indigo Girls.
It's weird.
Some Indigo Girls and Etheridge CDs. And it looks like there's also a softball in here.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And
well, what other lesbian stereotypes do we have? We're running low. We're running low. I was watching a show.
Is that a pair of Timberlands? No.
This is like, this is not. But you know, like those stereotypical things you say, and it's like, no, that's, you know, lesbians aren't really like that. But
yeah.
If you watch, I watched The Amazing Race, and on The Amazing Race Canada, there's like a lesbian couple and they're both softball players. Like that's their profession. Awesome. And like, they just gave right into that. They're like, we don't even care. Powerful. We're going to be lesbian softball players. And I was proud of them. I'm into that.
I like that. Swing away. Well,
yeah. Joaquin Phoenix.
Powell asks about her going up to Steve's room and essentially they just start blowing her up in front of her mom. Like,
yeah,
a couple
rude,
of douches.
Rude, rude, honestly. Yeah, right? Like when 15-year-old girls have sex, they want to keep it quiet from their moms, you know?
Is this before or after you change your clothes? And cut the scene and we go to Hopper talking to Gary, who was dismissed.
He didn't have time to talk to these little girls who are banging little boys. He's going to go into the conspiracy theory right here with clue number two.
And Hopper asks about the troopers. Gary admits that he's never seen that many. And essentially what we have going down here is them claiming jurisdiction, them bringing as many guys as you would think they'd learn something about JFK. And also that this scene is just telling us that the state got involved, booted Gary out. It was weird. There was a lot of people. They didn't let him near the body. They got rid of him. There was a guy named, was it David O'Bannon on the TV?
David O'Bannon was the guy on the TV.
He was a state trooper on the TV that discovered Will's body. And, of course, we see Hopper watching that before we end this scene. So, like you said, Hopper's just doing his thing. He's doing his investigatory work, carrying on with things, and I like this here. We move over to the kids riding their bikes to school. All the kids on their bikes, Elle with Mike, of course. They get to school, go to the Heath kit. The door's locked to the audio visual room or audio video room. And then, of course, Mr. Clark shows up having recently murdered a small boy.
Yeah. Oh, my God. How is he not the creepiest person on the show? Forget the monster. Have you looked at Mr. Clark?
I'm starting to turn on him. I think I'm starting to think he's okay.
No, no. Yeah, he is for certain a serial killer and child murderer, and he probably has Will.
Him and Mr. Wheeler?
Yep. Mr. Wheeler and Mr. Clark are in this together. They have Will and Barb in their basement, in somebody's basement. Probably Mr. Clark's because he definitely doesn't have a wife. 100% for sure he does not have a wife.
That's why they have the wig.
That's why they have the wig, because Mr. Clark wears it sometimes.
But anyway, Clark wants them to be there for Will. And the boys make a joke about how they need, not a joke, but they try to lie by saying, we need some time to cry, essentially alone in here in this room.
So funny.
There's a cute exchange about Elle's home, which we've already touched upon.
She tries to say her name is Eleven, and they cut her off. Eleanor, Mike's second cousin. Where are you from, Eleanor? Bad place. Sweden. She's Swedish. A lot of my family's Swedish. It's very cold there. Sub-zero. The way
he says sub-zero.
just the way they interact is so, so, so well done. And I don't imagine these kids are ad-libbing. I mean, but man, it sounds like they are. They're so good at feeding off each other. It's very impressive.
So they head to the auditorium, and then we move back over to Karen
yelling at Nancy for boning her boyfriend.
Just going after it. Karen pushes Nancy, and Nancy just says, "We slept together. Is that what you want to know? It doesn't matter." Mom says, "Yes, it does." And Nancy says, "Listen, something terrible happened to Barb, and nobody is listening." Karen tries to console her. She goes to her room, slams the door. And then Nancy starts to go through these photos, and she jigsaw puzzles the one that was ripped up and spots an odd image in the photo, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
The clues continue to mount up. All right, let's talk about the lab. At the lab, we have the control room people, is what I'm calling them, trying to communicate with this guy, Shepard, who went into the ether demon verse.
Excuse me.
They ask where he is. He tries to describe it. He says something about erosion.
Low visibility.
Then there is something else in there. We hear a creature noise. He screams. They start to pull him out. They pull out just the cable, which is covered in this goo. It looked like a black glue, goo.
So he's good as dead, I wrote.
Yeah, he's hanging out with Will, probably.
And Barb.
So do we think the lab is... Do we think this goo etherverse is connected to the mind powers of L? Or do we think this is coincidental error? What do you think about
this? I think it has something to do with her escaping, that this monster got out the same night.
Yeah.
I can't quite figure out what their connection is or how they're connected, but it's certainly there.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I almost feel like, is L a separate experiment from what was going on here? I don't know.
It's just so odd that the night that this thing escapes, that L also escapes, which is why I think there's more of a connection between the two. Not that they're just two random separate experiments.
Yeah, absolutely. In the chat, Daniel Falch is saying, "No camera, dumb." That is a great point.
I agree.
Yeah, he should have went in with a camera. I mean, even 100%. Though it wouldn't have been a digital camera, it would have been a shitty camera. It probably wouldn't have made it out.
It would have been Jonathan's camera.
The camera probably wouldn't have made it out.
It would be like, why are there pictures of high school girls on here?
Because remember, there's no like Wi-Fi live streaming.
Oh, God, life was so hard before the internet.
I mean, I guess he could have streamed somehow, some kind of bring a wire in with him and film it, have the wire go in with him. Do you know what I mean? I guess he could have done something like that. Why not? Yeah, kind of silly. They should have had some kind of recording device in there.
Agreed.
Well, they don't get Shepard back, so poor Shepard goes away. And then we go back to the auditorium. They say a few nice things about Will, blah, blah. They talk about a grief counselor. Mike calls everyone fakers. We then see the two bullies talking shit about Will. One of their names is Troy.
He's douche.
L calls them mouth breathers.
Oh my God. Love this moment where she says that. They're making fun of Will. And she just looks right at Mike and she's like, mouth breathers.
Right.
I can't even tell you. How, if you do not love L, like there's seriously something wrong with you and you have no soul and no heart.
Wow.
Like there's even somebody on my Facebook who's complaining and said they didn't really like this show. Again, don't know what's wrong with them.
That's because they're.
But they said they liked L at least. They said they didn't like the synthy music, as a matter of fact.
Wow. That person should be ejected from your friend list post haste.
This person is a Stephen King lover too. I'm very disappointed.
Ejected post haste. All right. So where was that before you jumped in there? I was doing something.
Mouth breathers.
Mike confronts Troy. You think this is funny? Because you saw him laughing during the little ceremony. Mm-hmm. I saw you guys laughing. I think that's a messed up thing to do. Mike's so honest.
I know.
He confronts him with his honesty that is just lovable. He's like a Labrador retriever, this kid.
Just Troy, goofy and lovable.
Well, he's maybe not that goofy. Troy suggests that Will is happily flying around with the other fairies, happy and gay. Will pushes him down. He gets up and tries to attack Mike, but gets frozen in place by Ill's mind powers, her psychic ability. And then he pees his pants, which essentially is social death.
Oh, my God.
In middle school. And then all the kids laugh at him. Even his little sidekick buddy abandons him.
Wouldn't you abandon your friend in middle school if they peed their pants? I mean, like, once you get to college, if you pee your pants, it's kind of okay.
Well, that it depends on how many drinks you consume.
And once you get to drinking age, who hasn't seen you pee your pants?
Yeah. Well, then you move on up to pooping your own pants. And
no, I haven't gotten there yet.
We start as babies, pooping and shitting ourselves, peeing and shitting ourselves, and we end as babies.
Then we turn 21 and we do it all again.
Shitting and peeing ourselves. Well, Alice got a little bit of a nosebleed, exercising her powers. Mike and his buddies take off, and Troy's sidekick abandons him, as I said. So
I like that this obviously took a lot of concentration and work for Elle and was painful for her. We know she gets the nosebleed.
Sure. That is an indication that this is not a pleasant power to enact.
But she wanted to do it for Mike because these kids were making fun. It's very adorable. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, it's a great point. It shows the depth of and strength of these characters. Even though they're just kids, we get these characters willing to subject themselves to pain in an attempt to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're always reminded of by these kids, is that they're the moral center of the story. We saw it last week when Will got smashed on the chin and got up and was like, well, I guess we'll use this rock. Then in this one, we get a situation where we have Elle doing what she needs to do, Mike confronting Troy. These kids are always the moral center, and they have the courage to do the right things, even if it puts them in harm's way. When Mike confronted Troy, he didn't just do it because Elle was there, because he doesn't know Elle's going to do something blatant in front of everyone, right? He did it because it was the right thing to do in that moment, and that's what I love about this.
Right, and that's how he's been. He's been there whether Elle's there or Elle's not there. You know, he's true to himself and to his friends and the people he cares about.
Right. We go back to some dude trying to sell a coffin to Jonathan. These fucking people.
You know what it makes me always think of when I see stuff like this?
6 Feet Under on HBO.
Always, 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 always. I'm like, is it like that behind the scenes?
Matt and I talked about this on one of our science fiction film podcast episodes where they're like, I think Auntie Joyce would like a satin pillow.
Oh my God. Six Feet Under is such a good television show.
Nancy shows up because she wants the D, I guess. I don't know.
She's a new D. This is my new couple. Someone give them a ship name. Nonathan.
Sucks.
Chancy. Jancy.
Chancy's better.
All right, Jancy. Jancy's hashtag Jancy. Better. They're coming together. It's about to begin.
Her showing up at the funeral home is a direct result of there being no cell phones.
Seriously?
She's like, she goes to his house. I don't know. I think he's at the thing. So she goes there because that's what you had to do back then to communicate.
You can just shoot a text. Hey, Jonathan, it's Nancy. Got your number from Tommy. Wondering if we could meet up and talk about those photos. Could you like text me a couple? Thanks.
Jonathan responds, totally shopping for coffins run out. Makes me totally want a smiley face with a gun to its head.
I'll get back to you later.
Right? I love it.
Oh my God. Oh,
boy. So they talk about the photo. That's why she's here. He says it looks like it could be some sort of perspective distortion, but it is a bit weird because the lens that would do this I wasn't using. He says that he didn't see anybody. Barb was there 1 second, gone the next. And then Nancy says that the cops think she bolted. Nancy admits that when she went back to Steve, she thought she saw something, a weird man or something.
This, to me, is so, so, so important. This conversation between the two of them. Because we watched Nancy try to tell us to Steve, and all Steve cared about was beer. And now Here she is about to open up to somebody she does not know from anything, really. We have no indication that Jonathan and Nancy have any type of pre-existing relationship other than that they go to the same school and that Nancy is a nice person. But she's sitting here with him, this kid who just lost his brother, and she starts to confide in him about this. And I think that says a lot about how Nancy feels about Jonathan in this way. I don't think she would just go up to anybody and confide in them. I think there's something about him that she feels like she can talk to him in that manner.
Yeah, she has there's a sensitivity to her where she looks out for the, it's going to sound very harsh to say this, but the lesser folk, like the less socially.
I just think about how many times I'm like, I really relate to Jonathan, who stalks people and is socially awkward and a loser.
The lesser folks, you know.
He's lesser. Jess, you relate to him? Great. Lesser.
The dumb brains, the ones who have trouble getting right, you know. But no, in all seriousness, she does have this empathy in her, which is what I like about her character. And she also knows that Jonathan and her can sympathize with one another because they're going through something similar. I do like how she apologizes, starts to leave, but then Jonathan asks her,
what did the man look like?
Right. She says she doesn't know. It's almost like, and then Jonathan finishes, he didn't have a face.
Nancy and Joyce have the same monster.
Nancy and Joyce have the same monster because that's what Joyce said.
Wish I had not seen the monster because it's terrifying just hearing about it.
Yeah, faceless monster. If you guys ever get bored, Google the Slender Man images.
read the creepypasta story about it. Oh, oh my God. There's a creepypasta called The Smiling Man. Read that shit.
There you go.
Terrifying. Really short, too.
So Hopper drinks at a bar, and he buys this trooper O'Bannon a drink. Says he's celebrating his daughter's spelling bee victory, not dictionary. The trooper asks him what his daughter's name is, and Hopper says Sarah. They raise a glass to Sarah, and then Hopper wonders out loud where he has seen this man before. And the guy's like, well, you might have seen me on TV. I found the buyer's boy. Just dumb luck. I was out on patrol, just happened upon him. And then Hopper says, the quarry, how is that state run? And O'Bannon says, yeah, but he's like, actually, it isn't, because the Sattlers own that. Frank Sattler owns that quarry. So it's not state property. And Hopper just says, why are you lying? He confronts this guy publicly in a bar after raising a drink with him. And the guy's like, what's your fucking problem, bro?
Thanks for ruining the game, dick.
Yeah. No problem, man. Just a concerned citizen. Anyway, hard cut to Dan getting his ass beat by Hopper. He's interrogating.
Is his name Dan?
David O'Bannon.
Oh, I thought his name was Eric O'Bannon, but I guess that's the wrong Netflix show. I guess opposite side, cop versus crazy, drug guy.
So he was told to call it in and not let anyone get close. So he gives up information.
To the body.
Yep, he gives up information pretty easily. Hopper asks who he works for. We see this car that was watching that area speed off. And Dan says that you're going to get us killed.
Hopper, his name's not Dan.
Sorry. O'Bannon says that he's going to get them both killed. Hopper starts to move towards the car, and O'Bannon runs off. So now we are Clue number three.
Hopper, I love the shit Hopper's doing this episode.
Yeah, he's awesome. We haven't talked enough about him.
He believes this conspiracy.
He does believe the conspiracy, and he's going to be the one who's more convinced than anyone, except maybe Joyce, which is funny to think about, because when the episode starts, it's him and Joyce.
And he's trying to convince Joyce that she's crazy, basically.
And when the episode ends, it's going to be, holy shit, this is a fake body.
Hopper's crazy, too.
Right. But Hopper's smart. So Hopper is going to be playing it tighter to his chest because he is in a different position emotionally than Joyce is. And that's what I like about this. We're seeing some slick behavior from Hopper, which is what I like. I like this investigation work. So Joyce puts on the Clash. Talk to me, she's shouting. We go back to the kids, get to
Lights
work.
Lights are not talking today.
No. The kids get to work on the Heath kit. Elle flashes back to evil Matt Modine.
Brenner.
There is an image of a man on the table, a photo. I need you to find him. Elle is scared, her body language. She's got her knees up. She's got her head down. She doesn't want to do this. She thinks maybe that Brenner. I do that every time. She thinks maybe Brenner wants her to hurt this guy, but he's like, no, I want you to listen to him like we used to do with the nursery rhymes.
Yeah,
that's pretty revealing.
Revealing as far as how long Elle has been in their possession. I still don't necessarily think he's actually related to her.
Okay.
Or actually her father.
How come?
Because I just don't think that. I think that she calls him Papa. I go back to, we talked about this last week and somebody in the chat brought it up, but I really think that that's the case. I really have the feeling that he took her at a younger age and he said, I'm your papa, like your mother's dad, like, or whatever he said to her. I still think he kidnapped her. I still think he's not actually related to her, but he's obviously, this tells us she's been with him for a while.
Do you think Elle could be Sarah, Hopper's missing girl or dead girl, or probably not,
oh,
right?
Oh gosh, no. I think that would be a little too convenient. A lot of shit about it if that happens. Too much of a happy ending for me. I like a little devastation in my everything.
I watch. Yeah, I agree. So I want you to listen to him, repeat it back to me. And then we see Elle start to concentrate. And then we realize that the man in question is simply in another room.
Just saying rando words.
Right. The lights flicker and on the intercom we hear the man's words.
Enchantment. Giraffe. The Hound. Red Sox. That's what he said.
We flash back to Elle concentrating on Will. The lights go out in the Heathkit room there. And then we hear clanging. This is cut against Joyce hearing the exact same clanging. So now we're getting Elle picking up on the interaction between Joyce and Will at home.
That's what she's doing. She's taking what he's saying and she's putting it somewhere else.
Right.
That's what she's able to do.
It's awesome. The boys try to call out to Will, which is adorable. Lucas is like, why can't he hear us? We see Will through the wall at Joyce's house. The boys can hear the interaction. Will says,
it's like home, but it's dark.
Yeah. Will says, it's cold and dark and empty, right?
Right. And he says it's like home, but it's cold and dark and empty. Yes. Mom's, and that's important too. It's like home.
Yes.
Because we're assuming based on where we saw Barb that they're in exactly where they were. It's just an alternate dimension of sorts.
Right. Like much like when he flipped over, when Elle flipped over the game board.
Exactly. Cool, right? Oh my God, that show's so good. I can't even.
So Mom swears she will get him, but urges him to hide. You have to run now. Run. So Mom sends him away to help him. The Heath kit bursts into flames. Dustin puts that shit out. Elle has a nosebleed, seems dazed. Mike and Lucas, of course, help her up, and they split as the fire alarm rings out.
The walls are recovered itself back up. We can't see that weird, like,
fleshy
body thing. So she's like, thank God I got that axe, because I got some shit to do.
Doing a little rearranging.
But the problem is that the axe just goes right through the wall to her front yard.
Yeah. We go back to the dark room. We see Jonathan and Nancy. Jonathan's working on the photo. Nancy asks how long he's been doing photography. This is a great scene.
I like a lot about what's going on here.
I do too. Jonathan says he would rather observe people than, you know, talk to them, Nancy offers. Jonathan says he knows it's weird. This is what I mean. He has a self-awareness here, much like his
Joyce,
mother.
Yes. Right?
I know it's weird. I know it sounds weird. And that's what I mean. He knows it's weird behavior, but he does it anyway. So it's not like he's oblivious to the fact that he has social awkwardness. He gets it, which is what I like about this character, which is another just good piece of writing to me, is that we're seeing that this character is mature enough to understand that his behavior is abnormal, and he understands that, but he does it anyway because it's easier for him. He doesn't want to subject himself to the social stratuses of high school.
Right, right.
Nancy asks what he was saying. Jonathan apologizes for taking her picture, right?
Right.
And then the photo develops and they see the creature. Nancy says that this is what she saw. Jonathan says that he thought his mom was crazy, but now he doesn't think it is Will's body.
Will might be alive, and so might Barb be.
Nancy says that if he is alive, Barb is alive too, right? So Hopper goes to the morgue with a great fucking scene here. You got something you want to say?
No, I just wanted to, briefly just mention on the interactions between the two of them.
Yes, please
And
do.
That it's not just like Nancy's like, oh, this guy happens to randomly have been in this place and has these pictures because he's a creep. She's genuinely interested in having conversation with him because she asks about the faceless man and what Joyce saw. And Jonathan doesn't really want to talk too much about it. And so she starts asking him about himself. Oh, how long have you been doing photography? Awesome. Like Nancy's great a fucking point. Nice person.
Yep.
Who is genuinely interested in other people.
Yes, and that is hallmark of somebody who's being pretty nice.
Right. She's not... Yes, of course, you might not have gone and talked to him if it wasn't for this photograph thing, but she is still being very genuine with him, and that's why Nancy is just a likable person to me.
And I think you hit the nail on the head when you say genuine.
Yeah.
And because that is a characteristic of people who are typically genuine. They're not waiting for their turn to talk to you. They want to hear what you have to say. They're really interested in it for whatever reason. They just are. And you can tell that's the case with Nancy whenever she interacts with Jonathan.
Or anybody.
In general,
she seems to be that way.
Right. Anyway.
So Hopper.
He gets stopped by a trooper, and after failing to convince him, he just smashes his fucking lights out.
He says he's
out.
O'Bannon at first, which I love.
Hopper goes in, pulls out the body, realizes it's a fake stock full of stuffing. A great scene, super tense.
But the way he pulls the body out, and the first thing that I said when the body was pulled out to Dean, because I've watched 6 Feet Under and 8 million murder shows in my life, including Dexter is a great example. There's literally no indication that there's been an autopsy done on this body.
None.
When you do an autopsy,
and they said
a necropsy,
they did one, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Anything like that, there are cuts, and then the body is stitched back up. This is common sense. I work in an animal hospital. We do it there.
Yep.
Obviously, a human hospital works the same freaking way. Yep. So right away, I understand why Hopper does what he does and why he's suspicious.
Yeah.
Because he was suspicious already going in. And when he pulls out this body that supposedly had an autopsy done.
He does pause, though, right? He turns. He's like, what am I doing?
But he does have this logical reasoning as to this does not make sense. I have to see this happening here.
Yes, I agree.
And what's happening is that this body is a stuffed animal.
It's a goddamn stuffed animal, man. So we move over to Joyce at home, sitting on the floor. We hear a vehicle arrive. And then, of course, it's Lonnie.
Bright light.
She hugs Lonnie.
I'm very interested to see what happens here.
Did that take you by surprise?
That Lonnie showed?
Her reaction to Lonnie's presence.
Yes and no. I think that there's something in Joyce being alone, her son being gone, no one believing her, this emotional experience she's going through. Jonathan's off playing detective with Nancy now. She's by herself and seeing this person, the father of her children, the only person who might be able to really, truly be with her, understand her on this. I think her reaction is realistic. And I think that we all say, like, no, it wouldn't be like that. But I think...
Yeah, I think so.
I mean...
There's a shared tragedy. It's their kid.
And there's something about, you know, someone that you loved and were with for a long time in that manner and seeing them, how that could be comforting to you. So I'm very curious to see how this goes. Because I think Lonnie's a douche. But I also think in the one episode we saw Lonnie, he was not well-developed, but he was still developed somewhat as a character.
Yeah.
As I talked about on whatever episode we talked about him before. So I'm really, really curious to see how this goes with Lonnie being there.
I like it a lot.
Very curious because I think he's an asshole.
Yep.
But I think that he's not a two-dimensional character by any means. So I'm really, really interested to see how this goes.
Yeah. I think when you have a situation where the only two people who know how those two people feel are those two people.
Or each other.
Because it's their kid. And that is, I think, what breaks down whatever walls they had between them in favor of the comfort of one another, because they truly understand what's going on
right together.
Yeah, and I like that a lot. So we end this episode in a very awesome fashion, a great cliffhanger, kind of. Hopper goes to the property border of the Hawkins lab, and he has his bolt cutters, and he just goes, snap. He's going to break his way into the installation. And we fade to black, and the episode ends there. Awesome. That's it. That is chapter 4, The Body. We are going to do a couple listener comments.
By a couple, there's only one. I already read our...
I have an Andrew email. You can do Earl. I have an email.
I'll do Earl.
Yep.
He has been making fun of me in the chat about making water, I feel like, for half an hour.
Yeah, well...
And now he says that I talk like a Canadian, so...
You say a boat for some
reason. I don't know why.
It's so weird. It's the only word you talk
about. Do I do it all the time?
All the time. I've teased you about that forever.
Because I wonder if it came from...
You say a boat.
Like, I do watch a lot of Canadian shows. Like, I watch Big Brother. Canadian reality. Was it before I had my Canadian friends that I talked to?
I don't know why you do it. It's really weird. It'd be like if I just had one random word that I use like a Scottish accent on.
I don't know why I do it. I don't do it on purpose.
Dean, did you just say all right like a Scotsman? All right.
Maybe I wish I was Canadian.
Ugh, gross. All right.
There's a really good best school. I might go out there.
So,
I hope it says about in this comment so I can.
About. All right. Let's do these listener comments and then we'll go to our final thoughts. Jessica, do you want to start?
I guess.
Go.
David Earl, who's not Canadian, says, the earth must have given way. Joyce, with the tragedy that was the last scene of the last episode, we were thrown right back into that place. Joyce has been teetering into crazy zone. She jumps 2 feet in with this episode. When she goes to the morgue to see Will, she cannot accept his death. Or is she right? She honestly believes it's not him, and they don't show us the birthmark. How would any parent react? That was tough to watch. Drew Barrymore dresses up E.T. No, wait. Elle dresses up like Drew Barrymore. This part is great. She sees herself as a girl for the first time, and Mike sees a girl for the first time.
Oh, shit.
Tween boner jams for days.
Oh, no, you savage.
Mike gets over his hate for Elle pretty quickly. Son, you must think with your other head.
Oh, my word.
Hopper becomes more suspicious as the episode continues, partly because of the trust he has with batshit crazy Joyce. He starts to believe she isn't so nuts. I've been neat meaning...
Can I jump in there? That's a really good point by David I don't think we touched upon, which is it's not just Hopper's findings. It's the fact that he does trust Joyce as she asked him to in the beginning that really sets him on this path. And that's a great point by David.
Continues on my saying that there is a past between the two of them, clearly.
Yeah, that's good stuff by Dave. I'm sorry, continue his comment.
One more thing. I've been meaning to ask this for a while. Do you think Nancy is an homage to Nancy Thompson? Will she be leading the Dream Warriors into the future?
Oh, shit.
I don't know if it was on purpose, but I think it's a great, great, great choice of a name to call her Nancy.
Why?
Because it's an 80s...
Absolutely.
Nancy Thompson is... Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
Am I correct? The main girl.
Yes.
And I think that in this situation that we're in with this monster coming out of nowhere after them, and this Nancy has seen it, and she's this tough chick, and I don't know. I think if you're going to...
It's pretty good.
Pick an 80s character from a horror movie to name her after, Nancy Thompson certainly isn't bad.
It's pretty good. I like it a lot. Yeah, and not to mention he referenced the Dream Warriors, which is the third movie in that franchise. And oddly enough, Matthew and I were just talking about maybe doing a commentary on that movie for a bonus podcast for the members, which is kind of something we've been kicking around. So it's,
the third one? Why the third one?
Because it's fucking ludicrous. But I don't want to get off.
The first Nightmare on Elm Street is so scary. Sorry.
Super scary. But I don't want to get pulled off into the Dream Warriors talk right this minute. What I do want to do is get to an email that we got from somebody named Mo Favo. Cool name, right?
Yeah, it is.
Probably some kind of handle. But Mo Favo says, hello, your discussion about the actress playing Elle Millie Bobby Brown. She's an amazing actress. She had a very challenging role on the BBC limited run series last summer called The Intruders. If you can, you should check it out. Her character is a little girl with the personality of a reincarnated serial killer.
Oh,
manifesting
my God.
The whole series had an incredible cast, but it was not renewed, a little too strange. She did sit in on the After Buzz podcast and contribute and interviewed. It was a very interesting discussion. She is also a very smart person, though you may want to find that podcast and get a feel for who she is. And who knows, maybe you can get her on your podcast. She even had a role on NCIS last season, and I think she played creepy murdery in that too.
She was also apparently in Grey's Anatomy once, and Lord knows I've seen every episode of Grey's Anatomy, although I'm very embarrassed about it and certainly don't remember this one. I am 100% sold on this TV show and need to know how to watch it, because I don't know what I love more than a serial killer like reincarnated into the body of a child. It sounds like literally my dream show.
All right, let me continue this.
Okay, I'm really excited.
Also,
though,
you should look a little further into the Duffer Brothers. They got their big break on Wayward Pines. I think we did mention that, actually.
I don't know. Dean's been watching Wayward Pines.
I watched
though,
the first few. Casually. And when Chad Hodge, creator and showrunner, would talk about the show, all he ever did was praise the Duffer Brothers. He would make it sound like these two guys were the go-to guys for any kind of suspense writing, and that they are probably involved in more than anyone realized. So it's great to see this limited series go so well for them and their name on everything. Enjoying your podcast. Keep it up. The great reviews. Looking forward to the next one. Mo Favo. Thank you very much, Mr. Mo Favo. He sent a couple emails, actually. He sent a couple links to articles, which I'll make sure to get over to you so you can check them out, Jess.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
Well, those are our listener comments. Thank you so much for contributing, for taking the time to listen. We know that our schedule for this is not ideal. It's not a weekly thing that we commit to, which is podcasting 101. We understand that. We're trying to bang it out at least once a week, and we're trying to do it faster because it's binge-worthy, and we want to make sure we get it out there while people are still interested in it, of course. So that's what we're doing. All right, Jessica, final thoughts for Chapter 4, The Body.
This episode was really exciting. We started to bring characters and storylines together, which I always love, and I think it's going to get really, really exciting from here. We have Hopper kind of figuring out what's going on. We have Jonathan and Nancy working together. We have the kids all working together to a similar goal. I really, really think that things are going to get pretty exciting, and I can't wait to watch the next episode.
Awesome. Good stuff. Yeah, I don't think I have much more to add to that other than I want to see. We're going to get a lot of information next week is my guess, because we're 4 episodes in. The 5th episode starts the second half of the season, which means they're going to have to start winding it up, getting to the buildup that they'll then end. So that's going to be coming next week. I think with Hopper going to the installation, I think we're going to get good information there. I think he's going to start to unravel this deeper conspiracy. What I am worried about, but not really, because the show's done such a good job already and they're not going to sideline their kids, but I don't want it to become too conspiratorial and too adult-driven, because we need the kids to still continue to do what they need to do. And I'm confident that the showrunners will not let that happen. So I'm looking forward, though. I am looking forward to what Hopper finds going deeper into this. And I want to see more of Elle's development. I want to see development. Yes. I want to see what Elle can do. I want to see her powers. I want to see her backstory a little. I want to know a little bit more about Elle and her relationship to the lab. And, of course, to this guy's name. I never remember Brenner. All right. We are going to bid you good people adieu. Continue to look at schedule.libertystreetgeek.net. That's schedule.libertystreetgeek.net to know when our next episodes are going to be coming live and when the podcasts will drop. Jessica, tell these good people good night.
Good night, good people.